Yeah.
Guys, battle stage. You coming after me?
Yeah.
You guys arm for something?
Now, how long do you think this will
Commissioner Leonard doesn't interrupt the speech.
Yeah. No the problem. Long speeches.
No problem. He wore his fast
Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, January 27th, 2011. It is 2 p.m. and the City Council will come to order. Hi, Carla.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
She's a little ahead of myself.
Leonard?
She's ready to vote.
Adams?
Here. The quorum is present. We shall proceed. We have two items on our agenda today. Both are emergency ordinances, and I believe they are a pair. So, Carla, can you please read the titles for 105 and 106?
105, amend contract with Walker Macy, LLC for design services for the South Waterfront Greenway Central District Phase 1 project. 106, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to procurement services pursuant to ORS 279C and City Code 5.34 and provide payment for construction of the South Waterfront Greenway Improvements Project.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. This afternoon, we're bringing two items to council related to the development of the central portion of the South Waterfront Greenway. First, we are asking for an amendment to the contract with landscape architects Walker Macy. The complexity and number of designs to meet the federal regulatory requirements has resulted in substantial extra work. Second, working with OMF and procurement, we have concluded that the complexity of this construction project makes it a good candidate for a construction manager, general contractor, project bidding. And we'll explain a little bit more what that means. Our presentation will explain both ordinances in some detail. Now, the need for council to consider these two items provides a great opportunity to update each of you and the public on the status of this project in general. Our primary presenter this afternoon will be Eileen Argentina, Park Services Manager. She will be joined by Bureau representatives from our key partners in this work, Caitlin Lovell from the Bureau of Environmental Services and Lisa Abouf from the Portland Development Commission. South Waterfront, for many years mostly an industrial site, is now reconnecting with its historical use as a location along the Willamette where people have long lived, raised families, and built community. With some 2,000 new residents, the evolution of this new neighborhood is well underway. The opening of Carruthers Park earlier this year has given the new community a beautiful neighborhood park. With Council's strong support, we recently announced that the Portland Housing Bureau and REACH Community Development Corporation will be building 200 new affordable homes at Block 49, contributing to the further diversity of the neighborhood. And finally, after a lengthy design and permit process, subject to complex federal regulations, and that, I guess, is a euphemism, we are moving forward to break ground on the central portion of the Greenway in 2012. In short, we are keeping promises made years before I joined this council. This news will, no doubt, be cause for relief, if not celebration, for many of the residents of South Waterfront. Our vision for the Greenway is bold and ambitious, a regional treasure that both honors fish habitat with cutting-edge biodesign and that reconnects all of us to the Willamette River in this part of the city. So, today's presentation, which has three parts. First, we will refresh Council on how we got here. Second, we will describe in some detail the current project. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, we will clearly delineate the risks that Council will be asking that we will be asking Council to assume in making a commitment to go forward. The city team has been working hard with regulators and the public to bring us the best design we can afford with an accountable, well-considered risk mitigation plan. Ultimately, I guess you could call this a story of partnership and perseverance. With that, I'd like to welcome, invite Eileen Argentina forward, who's going to make a presentation with a PowerPoint. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners, and thank you for your time today. We're here to share the latest on a project that is important not only to the South Waterfront District, but to the entire community and to the river. We want to remind you of its origins and describe upcoming steps, and we want to ask for your approval on a couple of ordinances relating to the next phase. And as the Commissioner noted, we want to flag some risks that should be understood as we go forward. This shows the plan for green space overall, as well as the limits of the Central District in South Waterfront. And the Central District scope is from Lane to Gibbs. It's about 1,000 linear feet of greenway. The greenway extends from the top of bank inland about 100 feet. Here's a starting point for South Waterfront redevelopment, and you can see the old spaghetti factory in the foreground there, and this picture gives you a really good feel for the underlying topography that exists out there today. 8 years ago, Council set out goals specifically for the Greenway and South Waterfront and set a high bar for creating a public space that worked for people and for fish and accommodated multiple uses. Following the Council's 2003 direction, Parks and Recreation coordinated a development plan, which resulted in the conceptual plan for the 1.2-mile Greenway. This formed a starting point for more detailed design of individual phases. The development plan was a very inclusive process and included neighbors, regulators, people from throughout the city organization, and it helped to create the starting point, as I say. Below, you'll see some images that reflect how the diverse uses are to be integrated, and we'll, of course, have more on that later. I wanted to just do a little bit of a historical recap on what led us here. There's been a progression of steps that have been taken at the state and the local level for many years that set the stage for South Waterfront.
By the way, that reference to the 1903 Olmsted report was a shameless plug for Mike Howe.
No river presentation would be complete without it, I'm sure. It's also required an all-out team effort of city bureaus and others, and I just really want to recognize and identify those. Parks and Recreation has been the lead on design and will be on construction. PDC has led the way in terms of funding and working with the property owners. BES has advocated for environmental values and facilitated permitting issues. You'll hear from both PDC and BES after my comments. Office of Healthy Working Rivers has been another critical partner, leading the dock study, helping us to kind of balance different goals. Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, of course, provided the policy and the planning framework. Property owners have been key partners, neighborhood associations, homeowner associations, advocacy groups, and other regulators. All that work has yielded some impressive results. The commissioner noted that community building is underway with 2,000 residents, and the river frontage here looks pretty good in this picture. It's springtime, and the river's covering much of the bank. Building on the 2004 development plan, PP&R initiated a formal design process for the Central District in 2007. The area that we're talking about is covered under a development agreement, and which laid out an implementation plan. Walker Macy was hired to lead the design process. And we got into permitting in 2008, submitted our joint permit application, which goes to the Army Corps of Engineers at the federal level and Division of State Lands at the state level, and they coordinate with related agencies at their levels. It was at that point that we started to run into some real challenges, and over the next few slides, I'll be walking you through those challenges. They fall into three general categories: property transfer, permitting and design issues, and budget. In terms of the property transfer, the development agreement called for the property to be transferred to the city after it met certain conditions. In fall of 2009, the city attorneys advised us against taking fee title to this property, not because of anything major new developments with the property, but the overall climate related to the site's proximity to the Superfund site and third-party litigation that was sort of starting to find its way upstream and that would potentially create an unacceptable exposure for the city. Eventually, through extensive discussions, both with the city attorney's office and with the property owner, we landed on using uncontested condemnation. This provides the city a defense against suits such as these, and in fact, the process is created to enable improvement scenarios just like this one. And council authorized those condemnation proceedings in October. The permitting challenges were even more daunting. We basically, in this slide, you can see we're trying to go from the current status of the riverbank into what we see as a vision for the finished greenway. And as I said, we got into our permit process in 2008, and before too long, we realized that we were really running into some hurdles in terms of getting approval for the necessary permits. A National Marine Fisheries Service is the agency charged with fish protection under ESA in particular, and it was just becoming clear that substantial modification was going to be required. It so happened at that point that we had a fair amount of turnover within the Bureau, and it was 2009 before we were able to really tackle it. But we recognized that there was more emphasis on fish habitat that was going to be required. This will give sort of an overview of the site itself. With a new project team, our first order of business was to seek clarity about what it was the federal regulators were looking for. And what we learned is that shallow water habitat is their single highest priority. I've asked Caitlin to speak a little bit later about why this is so important. But since fish habitat protection is crucial, it's a very high priority for the city as well, we immediately set about investigating what would be required to accomplish what they're requesting. We have just to look at this slide, you can see the parallel lines, not quite parallel, but the two paths that are a requirement in the South Waterfront, a footpath as well as a path for wheeled vehicles, bicycles, and whatnot. And that pedestrian path, which is the closest to the river, really forms the top of bank. And we largely left that intact. We don't have a lot of room to work with there. The level of development is very dense, so we really were working with what was to the river from there. And what we did was to look at, okay, if we just simply maximize the beach that we could accomplish, the shallow water beach we could accomplish without impacting the upland, what would we get? And we found we could achieve about an acre of beach. But what it would result in is also approximately a 12 to 20 foot seawall for much of that length, right at the edge of the pedestrian path. That was problematic in a number of ways. One is that it significantly exceeded our budget. And it also didn't really keep faith with the vision and the plans that the community had articulated over time. It didn't really provide for a greener, softer edge. It didn't really comport with the South Waterfront Greenway design guidelines that were then under review. So we started looking for the middle ground, and we eliminated our in-water impacts, which consisted of a dock and an overlook, and we reduced the size of the beach in order to create a more gradual slope, an opportunity for riparian vegetation and trees, and a more natural bank treatment, while still utilizing soft engineering techniques to ensure structural stability. And I'll kind of walk you through this slide a little bit. You can see start at the river level, talks about OLW, that's ordinary low water, and then up above that, ordinary high water. So in the course of a typical year, you can easily see fluctuations in river level, this elevation or this amount. And then you see the shallow water habitats also noted here below as mitigation area. As the river level comes up, then it provides this shallow water that is so crucial for juvenile migrating salmon. So that's really became somewhat of the controlling factor in the design. And in order to do that, still have the more natural bank treatment, vegetation, riparian habitat, then our design team came up with what we all feel is just a top-notch design, a row of tiered precast utility vaults down here that are referred to in the vault retaining wall. They're open at the bottom, so they'll be planted with material, with vegetation, trees. There's additional area behind them, a gabion wall structure that allows for then another transition up to the pedestrian path, which is all the way to the left in this drawing, and that's basically the top of bank. So we had a certain amount of real estate that we were able to work with, and trying to get from the beach to the top of bank in the way that was balanced all of these competing goals that we had for the area. The other thing I want to call your attention to here is a dashed line that shows it refers to existing grade. So that'll give you a feel for how much earthwork's going to be involved in achieving this. Now, this is one cross-section in a 1,000 linear feet, and it varies from location to location, but this is a good illustration of the design that we've ended up with. As a result, we ended up with a beach area that's over 25,000 square feet and a bank design that we feel does a great job of balancing design, environmental, safety, and cost issues. I want to take a minute and talk a little bit more about the dock, which was a decision that we made, as I said, to pull that out of the permit. The dock was never funded for construction, but it had been intended to be permitted as part of this project so that when construction funding was available, the project could go right into that phase. We knew as we redesigned this that the dock wouldn't really be compatible with the shallow water habitat that was being created in the very location where the dock had formerly been looked at being located. And most important, it was going to be problematic from other standpoints in other locations. But most importantly, we consistently hear from regulators and other stakeholders that the city needs an overall prioritized approach to where water access is needed and how to ensure that associated impacts are minimized. As a result, we reluctantly made the decision to pull the dock out of the permit. Not doing so would have jeopardized our planned work window of 2012 and the partnership that we've developed with TriMet. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But we did take several steps to advance the dock issue, including working with the Rivers Office, who has initiated the dock study and made it a priority, largely in response to the challenge presented here, the need for this. We really appreciate the partnership that we have with them. The project does include a path to the river, and you can note all the way on the right side, it's a little bit faint, but at the north end, there will be an improved concrete path that will be a vastly improved access to the river's edge over what's there now. And in the lower left-hand corner of this slide is what that would look like. It's an example of what it would look like. The third thing that we did around the dock issue was that our permit clearly states the city's expectation that a dock is needed in South Waterfront and that the city will seek approval for that in the future. So we've put a marker out there. Just catch up with my notes here. So at this point, we'd solved a couple of major challenges around the property transfer and the design. We had a design that we thought was permittable and one that would be acceptable to the community, but we had a budget problem. The additional work to create the shallow water habitat, including excavation and bank structures, added about $1 million to the hard costs. Indirect costs had increased as well. At that point, we started to get into conversations with TriMet, who is in the market for mitigation for the in-water impacts associated with their light rail bridge. And there were a number of folks who recognized the opportunity that existed here, and those discussions were very fruitful. Ultimately, we decided that the fit was a good one, and TriMet has committed to contribute $1 million to this project, which was sufficient to really put us back in place where we had a project that we felt had sufficient resources to go forward. This is the budget as it stands today. These estimated costs continue to be refined and reflect our current assumptions. We've been conservative in estimating our costs. In the end, we know we'll be constrained by the resources that are available, and this is one of the reasons that we think the CMGC process, this is one of the items we're going to be asking for your action on today, offers a very effective framework for anticipating and managing costs and identifying the implications of various budget balancing scenarios. So we've got understand the cost will be for the project. We've identified the resources, and you can see there that largely it's TIF, Parks SDC, TriMet's contribution, the property owner as part of the property transfer agreement is contributing funds. There is contingency funds left in the Carruthers Park fund that PDC and Parks have agreed should go to this. We're still not completely closed out on that contract, so that's why it represents a range. To the extent that we need it, BES has made a commitment to help us with the environmental cleanup costs when we get there. And then we know we're going to have to do some work. Again, we think the CMGC approach will be essential here in value engineering, economizing, and just refining this estimate to make sure we're not overstating or understating the costs.
Before you move, if you could just go back to that, could you, for those watching at home, say what all those acronyms are?
Yes, thank you for that. TIF is Tax Increment Financing, Parks Systems Development Charge, also known as STCs, There's a row there for reimbursement from RCI, NMI, River Campus Investors, and North McAdam Investors were the two property owners that we worked with. And the BES is Bureau of Environmental Services.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've talked about all the challenges. Here's how things came together, and really in pretty short order last fall. In October, essentially, the pieces fell into place to allow the project to get on a very positive track. And in particular, in that same month, we resubmitted our joint permit application. We signed an agreement with the property owners on transfer, and we signed a non-binding memorandum of understanding with TriMet. We have some upcoming actions, and real quickly, I'll just highlight a couple of these. I mentioned we need to sign a formal agreement with TriMet regarding our mutual commitments to each other. That'll come back before council. Assuming council's supportive of our actions today, we'll be selecting a construction manager, general contractor, and the series of things that will need to happen so that we can stay on track for what is planned to be a 2012 in-water work period of July through October. I'll talk a little bit about the council action we're requesting today. As the commissioner noted, there's an ordinance, and this really comes through the procurement services that we've been working very closely with, an exemption to the low bid requirement. And the timing of today's presentation was really triggered by needing to get these ordinances approved. One is, as I say, the exemption to low bid. And I want to just highlight a couple of reasons why we wanted to pursue this approach. This project will require very specialized expertise. You can see from that cross-section that is relatively complicated. The constraints of both the in-water work window, the time frame, and the site are going to mean we need to be very efficient, very nimble, be able to move quickly to get the project done. It'll be a high-visibility project, and the multiple objectives, the different kinds of features that are in the project are not that typical in terms of finding a contractor who will be skilled at all of those. We will use a competitive process to select the best possible team, and the result will be that our contractor will be part of the design team for the final year, providing construction expertise as we finalize the construction documents. Not only will the plans be better informed as to constructability, the contractor will have a very good understanding of what we're trying to accomplish and what the project's really all about. The process, as I mentioned earlier, provides a framework for us to anticipate and manage costs. The other ordinance will amend our contract with Walker Macy to account for the additional work associated with CMGC and the additional time that we've spent developing design alternatives. The commissioner noted that we wanted to talk with you about risks, and there are risks associated with this. Here's what we need you to know. The site is characterized by a century of industrial fill activity. The bank of the river used to be hundreds of feet to the west of where it is now. Huge quantities of material have been placed here as the site became a location for industrial activity, including shipbuilding and shipbreaking. We've been diligent and prudent in testing the area to characterize the site and inform our estimated costs, and we've been conservative in our assumptions. However, it is possible that we could encounter conditions or contaminants that would require us to revise our plans. It is even possible we could conclude that this site is not suitable for shallow water habitat and the extensive excavation required to make that happen. We consider this a low likelihood scenario, but it can't be entirely ruled out. In such a case, there would be impacts to TriMet. They're relying on us to mitigate for their bridge, and they would need to look elsewhere for mitigation. We've been very proactive about discussing this with them. It's recognized in our MOU and would be part of the IGA as well. And the city would make the commitment to work with them to find an alternative site. The other area of risk that we want to talk about is around the durability of design. There are risks associated with restoring a more natural riverbank as opposed to leaving it in its current condition or seeking to armor the bank much more heavily. As a practical matter, the regulators would not, our understanding is they would not allow a heavily riprap bank under any scenario. Depending on what the river does, and particularly in the first few years before vegetation is well established, we could be confronted with having to repair these structures. It's important to note these risks relate to the area below ordinary high water. They don't compromise the adjacent properties or even the upland. Depending on the final design and particularly on the final conditions associated with the permit, maintenance of the bank will be a natural area subject to seasonal cycles, and our O&M estimate when plans are completed will reflect our understanding of these requirements. We have to do some work with TriMet. We need to clarify what our mutual commitments are to each other. We'll have shared responsibility with TriMet regarding compliance with permit conditions, and we'll need to work through those issues as part of finalizing the IGA with them. conversations have been very good, and I don't expect that we won't be able to get there, but that'll be another point, and we'll bring that back to council. In the end, we wouldn't be here if we didn't think the goals were achievable. I want to recall the objectives that were referenced earlier in the presentation, the council's aspirations for the Greenway and South Waterfront. The plans call for a highly urbanized environment that is well integrated with the natural environment, and to do so along a very dynamic river. We haven't done that before. It's unique. As the commissioner said, it's ambitious, and that's the path that has been set for us by actions over many years. Here's what we're trying to get to. We wanted to close out the presentation by providing a little more context on the project from the point of view of urban renewal as well as river protection. And to do that, we've asked first Lisa Boff, who manages the North Macadam urban renewal area for PDC, to speak, and she'll be followed by Caitlin Lovell, who leads science, fish, and wildlife efforts in BES. Thank you.
Thank you for a superb presentation.
Can you
lift the light?
I think so.
I think you did the impossible. I think we said that you had 15 minutes to cover 9 years of history, go through all the design challenges, explain everything in the ordinances, the action items, and then lay out the vision,
and I think with time to spare. So thank you for an outstanding job.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm here on behalf of PDC. I'm Lisa Obloff, and I manage the North Macadam Urban Renewal Area, as Eileen mentioned. We're very happy to see this project moving forward, and we do support parks seeking approval for these two items. As many of you are aware, this is a pretty significant day for us as well. We made a broader commitment to the district's residents, employees, and visitors, and we feel as though this is an important move in following through on that commitment. It is also a legal obligation that we feel it's important for us to complete per the development agreement that we signed with our private partners. I want to echo something that Eileen closed with, which is this has been a long process, and really the balance between the design's recreational, environmental, and revitalization goals align directly with PDC's own mission of creating a diverse, sustainable, and healthy community. And I think you see all of those in the design that's before you today. We've been very close partners, I would say, to parks over the past 5 to 10 years that it has taken for us to get to this point. And I want to echo something Commissioner Fish said earlier, which is it has really been about perseverance, I would say, across all bureaus, including Bureau of Environmental Services, as well as the Office of Healthy and Working Rivers, to really get to a solution that we think can work. And then I would like to close by just saying, I think as we look forward in this area in our discussions with OHSU and ZRZ, that the city's same partnership will be important as the city chooses to move forward with future segments of the Greenway. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Caitlin, welcome.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. Caitlin Lovell, Program Manager for Science, Fish, and Wildlife at BES. Eileen asked me here today to speak to you a little bit about the fish elements of the project, which have definitely been cause for some of the challenges that the project has overcome. A 4-year study commissioned on the Willamette River by the Endangered Species Act program, which is our program before we were renamed to Science, Fish, and Wildlife, found that young salmon use the river within the city to rear and grow before they head out to the ocean. Without that important and successful step, the fish simply wouldn't survive the journey, and all of the restoration projects in the Willamette Basin, as far away as Eugene, would be limited in their success. In particular, in this study, shallow water habitat, as you heard Eileen mention, it had merged as the important habitat type. Historically, the Willamette River was 80% shallow water habitat, and shallow water habitat is defined as 20 feet deep or shallower, and 20% deep water. Today, it's the reverse. 80% of the Willamette River is deep water, and it was deepened by human activities, and only 20% of it is shallow water habitat. As you saw in some of the photos, and as Eileen mentioned, the shoreline in this area has migrated significantly into the river's edge, and that's been part of the cause. The Willamette River between Ross Island and Swan Island is the most constrained and built-up section of the river. It has the fewest numbers of opportunities for in-river restoration, and those few opportunities arise only every 30 to 60 years as redevelopment occurs. The South Waterfront Central District Greenway is both the gateway and the opportunity that fish and Portlanders need. This project demonstrates that we can have development, public access, and restoration. The 25,000 feet of riverine habitat that will be created will be the largest restoration on the Willamette River main stem by any entity in the city of Portland. BES would like to thank and applaud Parks for working with us to see that our watershed improvement goals are met, including the stormwater treatment along the trails, the improved habitat, and the creation of large resting and rearing spots for threatened fish. And to thank the other partners as well, both PDC and TriMet, and some of our local partners have been very helpful in moving us forward. So thank you.
Any more invited testimony?
This is it. We may have questions, and then do we have any invited any testimony?
No one else signed up.
Do we have the money for the $8 million, for the $4 million from PDC?
It's in our budget. If you look, as you'll see coming before you, it is in, it's split over two fiscal years, but the $4 million is carried in the budget, as was the Carruthers expenditure to Parks for the and the savings that would go towards Greenway.
Okay. And why are there two paths?
I can speak to that. We know from our experience in other riverfront path environments that these are getting more and more use all the time. And best practices around the world, there's a separated path, one for pedestrians and one for bikes and other wheeled transportation. We see it all the time in parks, and whether it's on the East Bank Esplanade and Waterfront Park, River Place, the kinds of conflicts that are occurring, the stresses that it creates, how it takes away from the experience or safety issues. The dual path has been an integral part of the plan for South Waterfront since 2002, I believe, and it really needs to become the standard, I think, elsewhere.
And what's the confidence level of the budget estimates? Low, medium, high?
I would say it's medium. We have our design is pretty far along. We've been conservative, particularly on the environmental cleanup costs. But as we're trying to flag, there are things we just simply can't further test until we get in there. We looked at, could we test some more, spend quite a bit of money to test some more in the bank and see what would happen, and the costs outweigh the benefits of doing so and don't give you the certainty that we'd like.
And you mentioned the risk of improvements being washed away. Can you talk a little bit more about how high the river has to go before things get washed away?
Well, you know, each high water event is unique in terms of where it hits and how it hits. We don't have a final design yet, so we'll work with the structural engineers to define what is that magnitude of event that they're designing to and that they feel that they can stamp the plans to. And I can't tell you right now what it is, although certainly, the level 18, which is the ordinary high water, that could be inundated every year, and they're designed certainly to withstand that. But it's difficult because, again, high water events vary very much in their local effects.
Thank you. Other discussion?
Well, I think, just to follow up on some of those questions the mayor was asking. What's the high water mark right now?
The highest that we've ever seen?
Well, out today. I mean, the river's pretty high. I'm just trying to get a context.
Oh, I don't know.
That, are we talking 18?
No.
No.
Okay. I haven't checked the gauge today, but in the storm in December, it got up to about between 13 and 14 City of Portland datum. So, and that's usually what we see on an annual or biannual basis is about 14. The Corps of Engineers and the regulators like to use 18 as a conservative value, and that's also where we see a lot of the vegetation line established. So,
is it the high water plus the velocity of the river that will cause the scouring? Is that the right term?
Exactly.
I think it's like scouring.
Yes.
Okay.
I think some of the risk, there's a range of scenarios. Some of it may just be that materials wash away and we have to replenish plants and material that are in the vaults. You know, the worst case scenario is it just gets hit really hard and the tiered row of vaults, some portion of that would be destroyed. But it's designed to withstand, we know that ordinary high water will fully inundate the upper vaults and they'll be designed to withstand that.
And then on the environmental cleanup, you said we're conservative. I think it was like almost $1 million in there for environmental cleanup.
It's really just for disposal. We're assuming at this point that virtually all the material will be classified as lightly contaminated and need to be hauled off. We hope that that won't be the case and that we'll actually be able to reuse material on site, and particularly in the gabion wall structure where as long as the material was clean, it would be a very good material to use within those structures.
So when you say lightly contaminated, you mean it would not be hazardous waste?
It would have to go to Hillsborough.
Hillsborough?
Yes.
Not Arlington?
Not Arlington.
What's in Hillsborough?
A solid waste disposal facility that accepts up to a certain level of contamination.
Do you
I guess I'm just, is this consistent with what Zidell is finding and all their work right upstream from us or downstream from us in terms of contamination and hazardous versus lightly hazardous? Do we know?
I can speak a little bit to that. The Zidell property, the activities, the prior activities on the Zidell property resulted in a very different level of contamination there. We have not seen that same level of contamination based on the sampling that we've done both in the river and upland at this site. The Bureau of Environmental Services did a small bank proposal with NMI around the swale a number of years ago, and so we have sampling and data from that as well, and it came back fairly clean. So where we have touched the bank in this area, we're pretty confident that we've been able to manage around the risk.
And there are students at PCC watching this hearing will get college credit for that exchange.
All right.
I want to go back to it was very illuminating and very high level both ways, but that question of cost benefit is what I asked of Eileen and our staff. I mean, how much more testing can you do to find out what the risk is? And there's apparently a certain point where you're just spending a lot of money with a modest return. And so this proposal contemplates that we would go forward, but there is a risk that at some point we'd find something that's contaminated beyond what we're envisioning, but we're trying to do a balancing act here.
And I would add that there's been extensive testing of this site by Hart Krauser, who was part of the due diligence on the site, and this reflects what we found through that testing process.
I would also echo, we have additional information from the fact that the condos did excavate back. So as Caitlin had mentioned, the original line was almost back under those condos. So we do have a sense of what was also found underneath the condominiums when excavated.
I have some questions about the exemption from the competitive bidding process. Can you describe the selection process that will be used in the makeup of the selection committee?
You know, I'd like to ask Allison Rouse and possibly Christine Moody to come and speak to that issue.
Thank you.
Do we need Harry too, or is
I don't think so.
Okay, Christine, why don't you come up? I said Commissioner Fritz is going to have a couple of questions about this process, and then a suggestion of how we go forward.
So I think really Allison has been lead on just designing the process and putting the RFP together. So I'll maybe ask you to introduce yourself and do that.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Allison Rouse, Program Specialist with the Parks Bureau. and as far as the selection committee, we envision a committee of 9 at present, with representatives from the Parks Bureau, the management team, and the project manager at the Parks Bureau, the project manager from the PDC, as well as one of their construction managers to provide expertise, a representative from Bureau of Environmental Services to help us with the kind of soil and issues that may come up, a representative from the design team, and then also 3 evaluators from the minority evaluator program, so that's what we envision for that part. And what was the second part of your question, please?
Just the selection process, how you evaluate the different proposals.
Mm-hmm. We craft a request for proposals that is advertised publicly and with a kind of a clear set of criteria for a successful proposer to address, crafted around the technical needs of this project. There's quite a lengthy period, a bid period, so that they have plenty of time to examine the documents and the existing information that Eileen and everyone has used to craft your presentation. The selection committee will use criteria that's advertised in that RFP to rank the respondents and choose the top 3. And we may choose to interview the top 3, or it may be a clear selection. It depends on what we get back. It will be competitively bid. When we choose a successful proposer, that person will be signed to a pre-construction contract, which is for them the year that Eileen referenced when they will work with the design team to help with the value engineering and refine the design to its completed state. During that time, they will be asked for a proposal for the price of the construction work. And when a successful conclusion to that negotiation is achieved, they will be signed to a construction contract. at which point then they become the contractor and the project proceeds in a fairly normal way.
How do we establish the price at that point, the construction price?
They will be asked to why don't I pass to Christine? That's a technical thing.
That's a good pass.
And let me just clarify. I think sure. This is a very good process, and it certainly makes sense in this process with this complexity of a project. I'm just seeking clarity on exactly how those decisions are made and what factors weigh in.
Okay. So like Allison, Christine Moody, Procurement Services, like Allison said, after we've got the general contractor on board for to finish up the design with both the city and the existing design firm, they will negotiate a guaranteed maximum price for the construction of that contract. That contract will then come back to council for approval at that time. So you will have an option to look at what the guaranteed maximum price for construction is when we get to that point.
How do you figure out what's fair at that point? Because it hasn't been the competitive low bid that we would otherwise
cost,
have done.
Cost is part of the evaluation for the request for proposals. So there's, I don't know the specifics for this one, but there's things that project approach, firm capabilities, cost is a factor in a request for proposals process.
And it did say in the ordinance, qualifications, approach, and price. It also mentioned in the rest of the process that public benefits is one of the criteria that you use in selecting. And I wondered, are we allowed to put public benefits in, of the proposal in a as a fourth category for helping to select? I'm just thinking back to the discussion we had yesterday as far as apprenticeships and training and on-the-job inclusion of women and minorities. Are we allowed to include any of that in our evaluation?
Yeah, part of our evaluation criteria is diversity, and we evaluate what kind of subcontracting plan the awarded contractor would have. Although they don't submit a plan at the time of the request for proposal, they tell us where they would think that there would be opportunities for minority and women and emerging small businesses in the subcontracting. We evaluate what type of workforce that they have on their existing, with their existing workforce, and what they perceive would happen if they got the project. So those type of things are within a diversity criteria that we typically have awarded 15 points to that.
And do we award points for public benefits of the company in addition to that, or public benefits of what they're proposing to put into the project?
I would say that other than strictly the workforce outreach requirements, the public benefits are embedded in making sure that we can achieve the objectives of the project for the price that the budget that we have. It has to do with achieving the quality under circumstances of uncertainty. Beyond that, I don't have a specific public benefit criteria. Do you have something in mind?
I would say actually, if Commissioner Fritz, we can do it now or after the hearing, but if you have some thoughts on how we might strengthen this process, we would love to hear that, and perhaps we could, you can do it here, but we'd also be willing to have a meeting in your office and explore this.
I think this is a very interesting concept that we ought to be, all of us, looking at more. So one request I have, you said that there were lots of people on, different kinds of folks on the selection committee, and I am very happy to see three well-qualified women before me, and I'm assuming there's going to be some women on the selection committee.
Yes, there will.
It wasn't specifically mentioned, but often things come and they haven't. So since I just came from the Planned Parenthood lunch, I'm fired up with feminism right now. look out. Okay, I will get to my point here.
Commissioner Leonard is beginning to perspire.
I would like to request that for those of us who don't have a Bureau staff member on the selection committee, if you could invite a member of my office staff to observe the process.
Certainly.
It would be really helpful for me to help learn how this works and so that I can work with my colleagues to see if there's other improvements we can make. And I, again, commend Christine Moody for your work in procurement services, that you've been making a lot of improvements like this since your tenure, and I greatly appreciate it.
I can just add, one of the things that Christine has shared with us is that this process has turned out to be more effective in working with contractors and ensuring good subcontractor diversity participation. So that's just an added benefit that we're excited about.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is anyone
Thank you all very much.
Anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
All right. Council discussion.
Does anybody want to testify?
No.
All right. Please call the vote on the first item.
Fritz.
Well, I was on the Planning Commission when the North McAdam plan went through and the initial Greenway discussions. So it's exciting to see this coming to fruition and having dealt with some pretty significant challenges along the way. So I commend Commissioner Fish, who, like me on the council, has come into this with some fresh look and a definite commitment to figuring things out to how they get done. I particularly thank all of the staff who've been involved, not only in Parks and Portland Development Commission, Bureau of Environmental Services, the Department of Transportation, the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, Development Services. We've all been engaged in this, and indeed it needs to continue to be a partnership as we move forward so that we make sure that as many different needs are covered. And also our citizen partners who have been very helpful in advocating, in pointing out where city staff and others have maybe missed things or things can be improved upon. The new residents of South Waterfront are now active participants, and that's really great. Mm-hmm. And I think the Greenway is the key piece of South Waterfront, which will make it a vibrant community. And I'm very excited to see this further step in completing the Greenway, which is core to the entire economic as well as sustainability and livability of that neighborhood, in my opinion. So thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish.
Well, this is a complicated, risky project. And because of that, I asked Parks to put together a presentation and brief all my colleagues before this hearing to make sure that we had given them all the relevant information and get good feedback. From those presentations, we did get good feedback, and Eileen Argentina spent the last 2 weeks refining her presentation, and I really want to compliment Eileen. This is an extremely difficult thing to condense into a 15, 20-minute presentation, but I thought you did a superb job, and I want to thank Caitlin and Lisa also for your presentations and in laying it out so clearly. When I talk to people about South Waterfront, I generally encounter two camps. There's the cup half full crowd and the cup half empty crowd. And I think we know who falls roughly into one of those two camps. Amanda and I are fairly new to the council, and the council in the last 2 years has been charged with moving forward on some of the more ambitious and important pieces of the South Waterfront puzzle. I think our sense is let's look forward and let's honor past promises and let's continue to build out the community that was envisioned. If you are today walking around South Waterfront, you see the fruits of this collaborative effort and this team that is before us today. OHSU has a wellness building where I get my health care through my wife's employer, where I'm told Commissioner Leonard can be sighted sometimes in the morning in the health club. Across the street is a beautiful new building that's gone up that is home to older adults who've chosen to make South Waterfront their home.
You better not.
Never.
There's a beautiful new park. There's a beautiful new park that was a long time in the making but came in under budget, and I'm very proud that in the budget you received this today for the Greenway, there is the proposal for the contingency, that is the money that was not expended to be shifted over to the Greenway. We've received rave reviews on that new park. As you continue walking south, there are two new developments that have come in, and Block 49, which is the proposed veterans housing, is poised to break ground this spring. There's lots of pieces coming together, and as Commissioner Fritz said, perhaps the piece that ties a lot of this together is the Greenway. This is not without risk, and so I asked Eileen to be very clear in her presentation to identify the risks, to walk my council colleagues through this, and to make sure that they understood what they were, what they are, and so there was never a claim down the road that we somehow hid the ball on those risks, because a project of this ambition has risks, but it also has the potential for an enormous payoff. And as we all know, sitting up here, the people who live in South Waterfront feel passionately about adding this greenway, and this council is committed to delivering the right greenway. So in closing, I just want to thank all of our partners. First, of course, my bureau, Parks and Rec, Eileen, Zeri Santner's here, all the people who are working so hard to make this happen. The Portland Development Commission, Lisa, thank you very much, and your colleagues, the Bureau of Environmental Science, among others, we have the esteemed director here today. Office of Healthy Working Rivers and Ann Beyer is with us, and her team, thank you very much. Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has been with us on this journey. Bureau of Development Services, we got a bunch of lawyers in this room, Harry and others, thank you. TriMet, a few acronyms, I've even forgotten what they are. I would need Commissioner Fritz to remind me, and of course the neighbors, because this process from the beginning has been a collaborative process with the people living in South Waterfront, helping us to get it right. So to everyone who has brought us to this point, thank you. And now the hard work begins. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, the new South Waterfront neighborhood has been a challenge for this city from its inception, but I still support the vision and the policies behind what we've done today, and I'm convinced that ultimately this is going to be a great asset to the city of Portland, and it's on its way to doing that, but certainly one key link in that is having a greenway segment that we can be proud of, and I think the design and the hard work that's gone into this really is showing not only that we can think creatively and think artistically, but we also can be mindful of cost. And I realize there's some considerable risk when anytime you're dealing with potentially hazardous materials or historical areas like a waterfront. There's all sorts of risks that can be associated with that, but I'm satisfied that we've done as much due diligence as we can possibly do without actually getting in there and doing the work itself. But I do think this has been a great partnership, a pragmatic one, and one that will pay off for the citizens not only of the South Waterfront neighborhood, but for our city in its entirety and the future. So I want to thank Commissioner Fish and all the bureaus, Bureau of Environmental Services, Healthy Working Rivers, PDC, Planning and Sustainability, and the citizens and who've really rolled up their sleeves and produced a good design that will work.
Leonard.
I remember when the council in the 90s passed and implemented the decision to build the East Blank Esplanade. It was the object of a lot of derision. And since that time till now, it's probably proved, as it has become an integral part of the 40-mile loop and the greenway by connection with a variety of bridges that gets you over to the west side of the river, is probably one of the most popular amenities in the city, used by bikers, runners, and pedestrians, and people from out of town who just love the view. To view the action that we're taking today as an amenity to South Waterfront would be myopic. It, along with the agreement that I'm hoping is soon to come from Zidell on developing their property, it will become an integral part of the 40-mile loop, the Willamette Greenway, and we'll just extend that path that people use to connect to the river and to bike and run and recreate. So this is a very important piece. It has covered all the important elements. I commend Commissioner Fish for the diligence with which he's brought to this task. It had to happen the way it did for it to come together. And with a couple more decisions down the road, we're going to extend that greenway and the 40-mile loop to include this area, and it's going to be very cool. Glad to vote for it. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fish for his dogged oversight of this project. I want to thank my colleagues at the Portland Development Commission as well, and Lisa, in addition to Parks and the whole team. As you move forward, I'd encourage you to, and as you bid it, I would encourage you to be cognizant that you might have to phase something if we end up paying a lot more money because we find some surprises. So as you move forward, based on my experience on some other projects, so that things don't come to a screeching halt, but just sort of assume the worst case scenario, you find something you don't want to find, and then figure out what might be phased in later. The fact that we're doing some in-water engineering is it's aggressive in a tough part of the river, I know. And from everything you've told me and my staff, you've really thought about, I think, everything that you could think about in terms of dealing with various levels of the river and various conditions. And if it works, then it's going to be a national model of best practices. And if it gets scoured away while it's growing, then we'll have to go back and mend it. But I
and
think
if it is a complete failure, I will enjoy my service on the council. Thank my colleagues.
So I would just say that it's worth the effort, and it definitely is going to be improvement for water habitat, which is a long time coming in this part of the river. Aye. Can you please call the vote for the second item?
Fritz?
Especially like it when we have two paired ordinances, and it's my turn to vote first, because then I get to add in the things that I forgot to say the first time around. And one of those things is to thank Emily Hicks in Commissioner Fish's office and Patty Howard in mine for their diligent staff work on this. And then secondly, to emphasize again my awe and gratitude to the mayor for his direction to the Office of Management and Finance and his support of Christine Moody and others in procurement services throughout OMF, looking at ways that we can achieve our broader goals for the city and supporting all of its citizens beyond what we have been required to do or, in some cases, what we've been able to do before, looking for different ways because we know we haven't been achieving as much as we want to achieve. So thank you, Mayor, for that. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your openness and transparency throughout this process, as exemplified by my request, could I have an observer in this RFP process? And his response was, of course. And this council is making a lot of effort to work together and to figure things out because we can't afford not to. And we want to provide good value for the citizens, for the taxpayers' money, and that's what we're doing in this process, and I appreciate the work. Aye.
Fish.
Well, thank you for your kind words. And in addition to Emily Hicks, Jim Blackwood has worked very diligently on this. So I'm very fortunate to have both Jim and Emily on my team. Thanks to both of them. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
1 hour. We'll call it 1 hour.